The theme for the evening talk is clinging. But before I begin the talk, I should make sure that you understand the word clinging. Otherwise, it's going to be a little difficult. So, clinging is that a Hebrew word means grasping, holding on to. Could somebody translate this single word? So in the talk I use the word clinging or grasping or holding on to, same meaning. So clinging, grasping, holding on to. Sometimes in India they tell a story, and it's the same story recycled for countless generations, and the story kind of stays with one generation of yogis and meditators, and just very simple, very simple. And it tells of the way in South India monkeys are caught, and the local villagers will make a small box, wooden box, and it's like a little cell, a little prison, and inside some fruit will go, and the monkey will come down from the trees, the coconut trees, and put its hand through the cage into the box to grab the fruit. But once it's got hold of the fruit and grasped the fruit and is holding onto the fruit, it cannot get its hand out. So if it wants to be free, it has to let go of the fruit, hand can come out. And it doesn't realize this, so it's struggling to get the fruit, piece of coconut, out. And then of course the villagers come along, capture the monkey, and then train the monkey to run up down the tree, pick the coconut and throw down to the villagers. What they do, we have the mind of a monkey. Mind moves from within, and in its movement it finds itself in life reaching out to grasp, to cling to hold on to. And in the movement from the inner to the outer, and in the holding which takes place in various ways, one finds oneself caught up like the monkey in the field of pleasure and pain. There's the pleasure. Ah, I've got a piece of fruit. But there's the pain of holding on to it and being caught up in it. And teaching them practices, if we say, what are they in the most basic, simple way? They are teachings and practice of freedom through non-clinging, non-grasping, and non-holding on to. I want to know what the teachings are in their essence, in their simplicity. They are teachings of non-clinging, non-holding, non-grasping on to. Then we say to ourselves, but how can one live a life like this? But from another viewpoint, how can one live grasping after one thing after the other? Is that living? And the situation of clinging and grasping in this world repeats itself. And I remember, and I mentioned this a year or two ago on a visit here, in 1970, traveling, actually, I was just remembering, I was just asking Yael's sister, an hour or two ago, had watched a football match. And then I said, and it was right by the sea in a friend's home there. And as we looked across the Mediterranean, I asked, what's on the opposite side of the Mediterranean if you go across from Tel Aviv right across? Probably Cyprus, etc. And then I remembered, in June 1967, you may have some association with this period, but in June 1967, I was a hippie living in a cave in Matala on the beach of Crete. And these caves that had been built as tombs by the Romans during the occupation there 2,000-3,000 years ago. So we were doing things that hippies do. I shan't go into detail. And my intention was to travel around Turkey and then through Syria, Jordan, Lebanon, into Israel, down a kibbutz, and then travel on. However, this being the first week of June, it didn't seem the best route. So instead I went from Greece through Turkey. And in fact, if I may say, my mother sent me just a few weeks ago some colour negative of me hitchhiking on the road to India, which I've now printed and put on my wall. It's called Nostalgia. And so I travelled through Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India, which was then called the Hippie Trail. And then in 1967, there's supposed to be thousands of us were going to meet in Kathmandu for Christmas 1967 and celebrate arriving at the end of the Hippie Trail. And Kathmandu was Mecca, if I dare use that word here. And so we then so then we travelled on, and I met with a teacher by this time, years went by, and it was 1970, Ajahn Buddhadasa, now gone by, now dead. And he lived in the forest of southern Thailand for more than 60 years. And I said to him, what really matters in life? How can we really understand about the truth of things? Something like that, typical hippie question. And he quoted the Buddha, Sale Dhammang Nalang Abhinasaya. Sale Dhammang Nalang Abhinasaya. Nothing is worth being attached to. Nothing. And then he said, he called the novice over, the seminary or the novice, and said, go and give this young guy, he's about 23 years of age or something, take him to one of the huts in the forest and just tell him to meditate on what I just told him. And so I went to the forest, spent 2 or 3 weeks there, etc., etc. So one says, well, this is impossible to live this way. Everybody's got to be attached to something. Everybody's identified with something. Everybody needs to grasp onto something. And it might be that, again, we don't follow within ourselves what goes on from the inner to the outer, and what is the difference between clarity, clear relationship with, genuine connection with, and grasping onto. And to know this difference is the most profound thing to know in life, to know this difference. Sometimes in this funny world that we live in, we have set up these archetypal models of what we call success. And I just read as an example, one of the latest models of success is this fellow Bill Gates, you know, the computer software giant. And it's and people say, God, he's so successful. And somebody worked out, why people do this, I have no idea, that if one earns $1 per second every single minute of every single day for the next 3 months or 6 months, one would still have only 0.3% of what he has. One had $1 every single second coming in to one's life every minute, every hour of every day for the next months and months, one would still only have about 0.3% of what this man has. Wow. Understand? In other words, he's rich. We can say this man is rich. And then we look around, we have these Hollywood icons, and of course we have these sports people, you know, the woman who won Wimbledon tennis this year has earned more money since I disrobed in one game of tennis, since I disrobed in 1976 in one game. So we see these people, oh God, they're so successful, they have achieved so much, etc. Question is there grasping going on? Is there grasping going on? And sometimes we see that success breeds more grasping. What about poor old Steffi Graf and her father, those of you who know the story? Money, grasping, imprisonment. So sometimes in the movement of the mind, holding and grasping takes place. We may look from the outside and say, ah, so successful, but we just scratch the surface a little bit of the rich and shameless. And sometimes we see suffering, neurosis, unhappiness, alcohol, drugs, anxiety, opulent prisons behind tall barbed wire fences with Alsatian dogs. What has gone on in the psyche, in the reaching out with the grasping and clinging, that the consequences are a fear of loss, fear of change, consequences of I can't go out on the street because I'm recognized, and when I'm recognized people will keep coming up to me and saying, oh, you're great, you're wonderful, can I have your autograph? The consequences of success can be fear. What has happened? So sometimes we need to ask ourselves and need to be extremely honest with ourselves. In our relationship to the ordinary and the everyday things that we have, and we say, oh yes, I have these possessions. I have this watch, and I have this shirt. And, no, it's a nice shirt. And have a nice shirt from India. And other items, etc. In a way, when we suffer over our items, they break, we lose them, they are stolen, they wear out, they're no use, we lose them. When we suffer over these, firstly, it shows there was grasping. And secondly, we might ask ourselves, did I possess those items, or, more importantly, did they possess me? Did I possess them, or did they have a possession over me? Suffering tells us what's going on with our relationship. In ordinary human relationship, people that we live with, people that we have association and connection with, we say, oh, grasping and attachment, but that's what love is. And we often can't see the difference. When there's grasping in human connection, in human contact and association, one of the features of it is we keep finding fault. Think anybody that you know, and you think about him, think about her, think about them. And we say, oh, this person is like this, this person is like that, or she is like this, he is like that. Something is going on yet again from within. We're looking through the fault finding, seeing what's wrong, to the other, and in a way we've grasped on to some feature of that person. And we make a habit of it, and we keep doing it. And we say, what's wrong is what's wrong with this person. But actually, it's our grasping. And if we see that person regularly, because they live in our bed, or we meet them every whatever it is, Sunday to Friday at work, or whatever the situation is, and our mind keeps grasping onto one particular or two features of the person, that person is going to get thoroughly fed up. Keep grasping onto this about me. Keep seeing what's wrong with me. Keeps finding fault with me. Keeps judging me. Keeps criticizing me. And we imagine that because we see what a fault is, and because we see what's wrong, and because we keep telling the person will say, oh, wonderful, you're so clear, you're so right, thank you for this constant moaning and complaining for the last 10 or 20 years. It really transformed my whole life, and I'm so enlightened as a result. Has anybody ever met anybody who became happy through somebody saying, this is what's wrong with you? So something goes on in the psyche, in the human inner condition, where we find fault, where we find what's wrong. We keep repeating it, and the person keeps doing it. And we can't understand, but I keep telling them. And something goes on in the person where when somebody keeps attacking us and criticizing and judging and finding fault, it brings not insight, it brings resistance. It brings a feeling of being invaded. It brings a feeling of being attacked. And the result is that one either does one of three things. When somebody is grasping onto some aspect of our personality, we either say, all right, what about you? And then one's own patterns come in, and one starts to read out a long list that one has prepared in the diary for years about what's wrong with this person. So grasping and grasping go together. And like ships crashing in the night. Titanic syndrome. Or we become terribly defensive. Somebody's blaming us, criticizing us, judging us, attacking us. We start getting very, very defensive about our position. And we sound very defensive. We are very defensive. And no matter what we say, it sounds defensive. So the person says, oh, I'll attack a bit more because they're on the defense. And it gets increasing. Or we withdraw. I'm fed up with you finding fault. I'm fed up with you criticizing me. I'm fed up with you. Everything I say and do, it's always wrong. And then one starts to take a step back. And then this other person takes a step forward. And then there's this painful waltz outside to the front door. And bye-bye. So something goes on with grasping, where we repeat the same kind of things, expecting other people to change through our grasping onto them. There's no history of this, of success. Why should we be any different? So, therefore, awareness and love and connection and clarity must be different some way from grasping and clinging. Must have a different quality to it, a different feeling, a different outlook, a different attitude from this clinging and grasping that goes on. Same applies with retreats. We come into a retreat, and of course when we come into a retreat we bring with us our mind and body. We don't bring anybody else's, we bring the one that we've got. And if there are tendencies towards grasping and clinging, they will manifest here in a whole variety of different ways. Now what one person grasps onto may be different from what somebody else does. This is called human relationships. And so the best example of it has to be, it's like sent from the gods. It's called air conditioning. It's like something has arrived in the room and it's going to test where the grasping is. So there will be some, no grasping. If the air conditioning is on, fine. Air conditioning is off, fine. Windows open, fine. Windows closed, fine. No big sweat, either literally or metaphorically. And then there are others who will be saying in their thoughts, I'll never survive unless there is air conditioning. And some people are importing their fans. They're not creating a fan club, they're just importing their fans. And then the fans go on and the person feels nice and cool, and next to them the heat in the body is getting stronger and stronger because the sound of the fan, which is peace, lovely. But others just hearing the fan, I came on a retreat for silence. So one person's comfort becomes the other person's misery, etc. And similarly with the air conditioning. Oh God, lovely, so nice meditation hall with air conditioning. The prophets didn't have this, you know, 2,500 years ago. But we've got it, so we've got it, let's use it. So on goes the air conditioning. But then there's an inquiry, then there's some meditation instructions, then there's something to announce. And then when 10 or 15% of the population can't hear anything, because they only hear air conditioning. What are we going to do? some grasping onto this and some grasping onto that, and agitation, and more heat will come from agitation inside, and no fan on earth will cool the inside. Not a chance. If we are cool inside, we can take a little sweat outside. But if we're no coolness inside, everything starts to become a problem. A problem. Because we're not cool inside. And some of you will have heard in the Buddhist tradition the word nirvana. Vana means fire, means heat. Nir means absence of. One has stopped becoming inflamed about things. One has stopped getting agitated. And some other way of understanding comes, which essentially is one born out of interconnection. One feels for others as much as one feels for oneself. One feels for others as much as one feels for oneself. So sometimes we take in the meditation hall, when there's dispute, sometimes let it roll till the heat goes up inside. And sometimes, being one has the privilege, we have privilege here, one has authority. So in the authority, sometimes I'll just say, fan off. Fans on. And we'll sit with what is. I have this privilege to do this. Just say, come and switch goes. It's rather a nice privilege. More importantly than the privileges is what happens inside. What happens inside. And that applies to lots of other things during the day. Just last month, I resisted for years, I have to say. I went to a place called the Omega Institute, upstate New York. I don't know how to describe it. I suppose the what's that word? Club Med of spiritual centers. Club Med. Club Med means it's where the So this is Club Med of spiritual centers, meaning it's the bourgeoisie of New York go there. So anyway, years they've been asking me, and years they said, no, honestly, it's not my cup of tea, etc. And I had said to them, I said years ago, in the beginning of the 1990s, when my daughter is 16, she's a bit old, then I'll come. And they remembered it. Tragic. So one of the big differences between there and here is here for tea, a bit of bread, a bit of fruit, cup of tea, and that's it. At Club Med Omega, honestly, the kings of ancient Israel didn't eat as well as these people. The choices of food was probably from there to the end. And very nice food. Naturally enough, people left eating. Looking very comfortable. So sometimes, some of you may have memories of such things. Restaurants and workshops for the life. Huge evening meal and other things, event courses and things, and suddenly one comes here, bread, fruit, and a cup of dreadful Nescafe. And you think, God. So some people have gone begging to the start. Is there anything else? So out of huge compassion, there would be two choices of fruit tomorrow night. So I said, why is that? Why is that? Why can't there be more and more? Which one could do? Teaching is a practice of contentment with what is, not grasping, not clinging, and acknowledging the simplicity of that and learning to be at peace with what is. It's part of teaching, it's part of practice. And some will come and say, well, and you will know, some will come and say, well, I'll be quite happy when I'm here to lose 2 or 3 pounds in weight. I'd be quite happy, I'm quite happy to have a few hours of space between one meal and the next. I'm quite happy to have moderation. I'm quite happy to be here and not eating animal, birds, nor fish, or whatever. And some feel and the appreciation of that. Certainly tons of love and kindness go into all the food preparation, as many of us, perhaps all of us, I hope, know. But to watch the grasping. If it's grasping and clinging, it tends to create this agitation and restlessness with us. With no grasping, no clinging, mind can stay at peace. And the fact is, wherever we are in this world, whatever we do, wherever we go, one thing we can guarantee: we have to live with our mind. Wherever we go, that from that there is no escape. And so even though we might find the blame and the fault elsewhere, we might believe in it, but we might need to ask, who's unhappy? Who's suffering? Who's burning up inside? Who's in rage? Who's in demand? We ask ourselves that question. Then we have the chance and the opportunity to act wisely and clearly. And in that respect, we pay a rather important service to ourselves and a rather an equally important one to others. Sometimes the expressions of grasping go on in rather in sweet ways as well. And not at all unusual on a retreat, one enters into the silence, and some of you will know some of each other, and the great majority of people you perhaps have never seen before, and naturally some curiosity arises. Oh, who is she? Who is he? And sometimes some interest arises as well. And I just I remember a few months ago a newspaper reporter came to Gaia House, our retreat center. Her name is Annabel Heseltine, and she was sitting the retreat with Christina Feldman. And after about 3 days of the retreat, she came for a one-to-one meeting with Christina, and she said, I have a confession to make. I didn't come here on my own motivation. My newspaper editor sent me to write a feature about Gaia House. And so she came with a view to report what she saw rather than to look inside. But she got into the practice, etc. And Christina said she very, very committed and attended all the meditations and really began to work well and deeply on herself, to her credit. And she is also, incidentally, the daughter of the previous deputy prime minister. She has that, but they've now gone, and we always say hallelujah. And so she wrote a report, and a lovely, very actually a very nice, favourable report about the retreat with Christina and the centre. And she said in it, the thing that sticks in my mind, she said in it, what really she noticed were just how many very beautiful people were on the retreat. And women and men, how many beautiful people come to such events. And that's true, of course, and we see and witness this. So sometimes feeling arises. Feelings, energy feelings, and sensual feelings, and sexual feelings, and between genders, etc. And with it comes curiosity. We have a name for this in the tradition. It's called VR. Some of you will be familiar with this profound experience. It's called Vipassana Romance. And essentially, that usually on the first day it comes four or five people start to enter into the Vipassana Romance mind. Oh, she looks very interesting, he looks very and then it goes four, three days go by, it goes down to one or two or whatever. But the interesting thing is, one doesn't know anything about this person, yet with the warm feeling, very quickly the grasping begins to start, and everything begins to confirm the grasping that there's something special is happening. And the mind will do this quickly. The person feels great romantic feelings towards this other person, and then she or he is standing behind this person in the food queue. Tremendous energy and excitement. This other person knows nothing, of course, and the excitement gets there and gets very, very strong. And with it, the grasping comes, and then the mind says, "Oh God, he or she's in front of me in the food queue. It's obviously a cosmic message." Or the two pairs of shoes happen to be together. This is a sure sign that something profound is going to happen on Monday morning. So, feeling there, yes, why not, human. Warmth is there, yes, but in the movement that goes on, the grasping takes place. And when the grasping comes thought, and with the thought comes future, and with the future comes projection. And one forgets. It's just a momentary eye contact. One just liked the way the person meditated, or the way the person walked, or the person smiled for a moment. Any little indication. Warm feeling, yes. But when the grasping takes place, the picture story begins to grow. And it grows like fungus. And this poor other person knows nothing about it. Quite innocently meditating. Not knowing. And when the other person is behind in the food queue, and they've got their plate and their knife and fork, and they're so nervous, their plate is shaking. They get the rice out of the bowl, it's going everywhere, they're so nervous. Feelings, thoughts, potential, grasping. Human life is eccentric. So, can we, in this movement that takes place with us, with our life, begin to sense what is clarity, as I mentioned, what's feelings and acknowledgement, not suppressing them, not denying them, not rejecting them, but to see from the basic feelings which arise, can we accommodate the movement of the feeling? without it running into grasping. Can I have a watch without clinging onto it? Can I appreciate it? Can I be in a relationship without clinging onto it? Can I be a parent without being possessive and controlling? Can I be a friend without constantly bothering, putting pressure on? Can I be with these experiences without clinging onto them? Can I be with the temperature without grasping? Tremendous challenge. It's a tremendous challenge to live with awareness, deep connection with life, without clinging. And the message of non-clinging is almost, in a way, without sounding too metaphysical, almost a message in the nature. If we said, "All right, life is eternal, you and I are going to live eternally," well, if it's eternal, one could have some clinging because it would go on forever. But we know it isn't eternal. It isn't. And therefore, the nature will come and will take everything which is known away from us, called death. Everything which is familiar. So in a way, death is a clear statement, a clear encouragement of non-clinging. Why cling to anything? Why be possessive? Why be holding on to anything when the very nature will come and say, as the Buddhists like to say in the monastery, every day King Yama wandering around. King Yama is the personification of the Lord of Death. And every day King Yama wanders around the world. I'm not pointing to anybody, don't worry. And wanders around the world and says, "Okay, today it's your turn and your turn and your turn. Out. Your time's over. Your time's over. Your time's over. Your time's over." That's nature. We breathe in, we breathe out, time's up. So it's clinging and holding in the face of birth and death seems silly. And the more we cling, the more fear. The more we cling, the more worry and anxiety and agitation arises in the mind through birth, through aging, and through death. Therefore, can we know, as I say, to repeat myself, a life which lives with awareness, lives with clear connectedness and understanding from that, and understand what it means to acknowledge, to appreciate, without holding, grasping, and clinging? It's a tremendous challenge for a human being. But it's a challenge which is true to what? To the way things are. May all beings live with awareness. May all beings be free from clinging and holding on to. May all beings live with joy and love. Let's have a couple of quiet minutes together, shall we, please?